All right. So, it's Tyler Bryden here. It's been a while. I don't have the website up right now. I should almost have it. I shouldn't be talking about it if I don't. But it's been a while since I've done my last podcast. And frankly, it's been a really busy time in the last month or so for me. And so I want to talk a little bit about why and just sort of catch up on what's going on in the world. I've got, you know, it's been a blur of a month, and things have been moving obviously really quickly in the world right now. So probably have a couple things that I want to go through. It's a Saturday, so I'm relaxing here at home, and wonderful girlfriend is out. She's out doing some stuff, dropping some stuff at the mom's, doing a little bit of shopping and taking care of that kind of stuff. And so I'm left here on a Saturday. I could probably be doing some development right now or something, but I really enjoy making this, and I've obviously wanted to get back around making another podcast here. And so in the last month, I've continued to work on 6.5. Definitely have not trying to put as much work into growing 6.5, but maintaining really good relationships with the clients that I have, and have done a really good job at that. Signed on some good clients, just re-signed on some for some long commitments, which I'm really excited about. It gives me some stability, and it just shows that work that you're doing, you're getting some validation for it, that you're doing a good job. And sometimes sometimes it's hard to know what that baseline is, what someone considers good work. And so to hear some really good things from some clients that I've been working with for a long time, and how impressed they are with the work, that really means a lot to me and gives me the confidence to maintain those relationships, keep 6.5 in a really steady place and a great little business and model there. And so that's been fantastic. I've continued that. And I've also been putting a lot of work into my project called Speak. And some people I've maybe listened to, actually just recently, I've probably maybe started mentioning some of these podcasts, but has definitely been penetrating and infiltrating my life. And so Speak is a software. And so it takes audio, video, and text. You plug it through our little system that I'm building right now, and it takes out like tone, it takes out your personality, and then a bunch of other insights on your content. So I'm really trying to tailor to this towards people who are focused on self-improvement in some ways, but they're in sales, they're writing, they're producing content, definitely some really good applications for a consumer, just for practicing speech, for just wanting to communicate better. And I've got some really cool features coming in that regards that I think just a normal everyday to day person is going to love. And of course, the people who are in the business world and communicating all the time and in client meetings and account meetings, they're definitely going to really love this product. If you can bring it all together, if you can build it in the vision that you have, but to build that vision and get to that vision is an obstacle, and or it's a challenge, and there's a lot of obstacles to get there. And so if I build it out the way that I want, and if I can get the resources I need to do it, I do think it will be an incredible product that people want to use. But that is of course part of the challenge. And then on the business side, there's some really cool applications right now looking at, and have really basically secured my first customer for. Working on that is like phone line transcription and analyzing customer service calls and sales calls, and really giving a wealth of great information on what happened in the business. And for myself specifically, we run a lot of Google ads, and a lot of times those Google ads are built around driving phone calls. And so we can see that someone typed something and then made that phone call, but the question is what actually happened in that phone call. And when you don't know, you don't have that information, it really makes it difficult to add that granularity that you're trying to get to when you're at least when you're marketing. And I'm continuing to try to push what I can when I can find and the value that I can find and the information that we can extract out of, you know, the relationship that we have with the customers, whether that's online when they're visiting the website or whether that's just making a phone call and having a person-to-person conversation in that regards. So that's been, you know, even that, what I just said is quite a mouthful, and I'm still in, you know, that early phase of talking to a lot of people, getting some feedback, and you know, what I'm excited about is that the feedback has been really good in that regard. So that gives you, again, some validation. It gives you some confidence, and for anyone who is, you know, working on something, working on a project, you know, a possible company or a freelance, you know, thing that they're trying to do, you got to start talking about it, because you need to get that feedback early. And so much of the feedback that I've gotten has already helped me steer the product in the direction that it needs to be to actually be a valuable product. And I think a lot of times people are, you know, sometimes relatively building in a box in that regards. And so when you don't test with, not even if you can't get the customers, you don't have customers yet, that's not right, but just to ask people what they think, you know, who would they think would use this, is it valuable to them, is a really powerful thing. And so I've been doing a lot of that, and luckily I've got the you know, I've built some good relationships over the last years running 6.5, and so I get to ask some really cool people, some smart people, some people with some influence, at least locally in our area, and have a lot of respect. And so by talking to those people who have a wealth of knowledge in the, you know, some of the industries that I'm targeting, and just really an overview and perspective of the business world and you know, the operations going on, you can get a lot of really, you know, valuable information from that. And you know, they say, sort of, instead of, you know, doing all this research on your own, go to a master and learn from them. And in some regards, this is a really you know, comparable thing, that they're trying to reach out to the people who are the tastemakers, the connectors, the people who know what's going on in the city, who know what's going on in the industry, and can connect you at the right time with the right people and push you in the right direction to hopefully have an opportunity to, you know, to make that vision happen, and so that you can actually be successful. And there's a lot of energy that expels when you're actually trying to do that. And you know, for a bit there, I wouldn't say, you know, I would never say that I've been coasting, but before I've really started to put a lot more work into this Speak software and this product that I want to build, I was sitting relatively nice with 6.5 and really operating it well and enjoy it. I didn't see a need for big growth. I enjoyed where I was at, who my clients I was managing, and maybe wanted to grow it a bit more so I could get an assistant and maybe one other person to help me out. But besides that, everything was good, and so it was sort of a little bit more relaxing. And one thing that I've talked about in this podcast and sort of consistently is the switch that I made from, you know, building websites and going really project to project to now, of course, managing a lot of Google ads and doing a lot of marketing in that regards, where it's, you know, generally you have to make a change. You make you know, a couple of shifts to some of the ads, rewrite some stuff, change some structure up, add some new keywords and whatever you're doing. And then you're letting it sit for a couple of days and waiting to see what happens. And so you really can't do much in that. And really, you can't work that much harder in that regards. There's no more time that you can put in except for evaluating the information that comes in and making the changes at the right time. And that's where your value is. And that's, you know, at least in my mind, what we're paid for and why people pay us. And most regards, what I see is that our clients are very happy as long as they see that the value is there. But the thing with development is that you're pushing that project along line by line in code or design or whatever is happening, and so in that regards, that human capital and work that needs to go into building something like that, especially when there is a creative aspect involved, you know, maybe multiple stakeholders, then it can get pretty extremely difficult and complex, and those projects can be a lot of work. There can be a lot of friction, and it frankly that's a challenge. And when you're doing projects like that, where really you're billing hourly, and you're driving, you know, you're driving your sales and revenue through that, it's sort of an uphill battle in some regards, just because of how much human labor is needed, and those people are skilled and talented and often needed to pay well, and in, you know, in that regards, that makes a lot of sense. So you know, this Speak software and this work that I'm doing right now is obviously, and maybe not obviously, I hate when I say that, but is an extension of what I've tried to do with 6.5, and that is bringing in a more scalable component, and reducing the amount for, reducing the need for human labor and for human capital. And I've, you know, when I was first running 6.5 and starting to build websites and stuff, I needed a lot of people to make these websites happen, make it happen quick enough and get it built. At least definitely in my mind I did. And now again, I've eliminated that. I've got some software that I pay for, which is relatively expensive, but it helps me, you know, really reduce the work that needs to be done in terms of manual data entry and time. And so it allows me to not have to rely on human labor and capital and that. And so it becomes this weird, cold thing where you are, you know, really trying to automate a lot of parts of your life and eliminate the need for people. And it does. It's a very weird thing because, of course, you know, I love people, and it's not that I, you know, it's not that I don't want to deal with them. I think this is this weird thing that's being reflected in any industry where they're using automation or building software and building applications. It's just that it is so much more efficient and so much more effective, and it's almost like you don't want to have to put a person in that role. It's unnecessary for them to be there. And you know, it's weird. And so I continue to try to push that. I've done, you know, a decent job of that at 6.5, but there are definitely limits on that because of the business model and the actual operation of Google Ads and everything here. There's a ton of cool automation and scripts that you can run while doing it, but it's still a lot of work, and you need some human capital. And so the idea with Speak, and you know, I believe with many software companies, applications and software as a service companies, you invest time into development and you build a product that's valuable, and people pay for that, and you will continue to need people to build features on and do customer support and make sure that everything is running nice and smooth. But to me, at least in my mind, there's a beauty about generating revenue from your product, getting insights all the time from those customers, and to make a better product so that they can keep using that product and then grow. Like, it's just beautiful thing to have this ecosystem that you started, and if you can get that ecosystem starting in the beginning, that you can really truly grow it to be a cool thing and a beautiful thing. So I don't know if that's going to happen. That's obviously a dream of anyone who is starting the company. And it's interesting, right? Because I'm now 26. I've run 6.5. I'm coming up on 4 years of running a business full time, which is a pretty crazy thing. I do, you know, that's wild to me to think that I actually made it through somehow, and I've actually got some money and I'm doing okay, and you know, I enjoy my life and I love my work, and it's opened up doors that I never thought was going to happen. And so you take that experience, and you hope that, you know, that all that combined together, along with my, you know, my life and my story and who I am, and maybe some sort of chance of, you know, maybe there is some direction in this world and universe and something guiding it, and you know, that idea of purpose, and maybe it will happen, and you hope, that's what you hope, and I think that's what everyone's hoping. And I think I'm doing a lot of things to mitigate the risks that come with starting a new company or building a product or even going, you know, in any regards, you know, out of, you know, maybe a steady, stable income that you've, you know, could particularly rely on, you know, it's a weird, risky, exciting experience, but it can also be very stressful. So I'm trying to, you know, mitigate that stress, and by mitigating that stress, it's, you know, what the goal is to hopefully most likely produce the, you know, the best outcome. And I'm again hoping, using the foundation of experience that I have doing the marketing I've done, and I think, you know, also just getting a better grasp on myself and getting a grasp on people and actually having the ability to talk to people and get feedback from, you know, again, these very, you know, amazing people down in Innovation Works at my co-working space, but then also just people in the community who have supported me for a long time. So, whew, it's been a lot of work though, man. Like, it starts out, I think, you know, I meet up so many people who want to start a business. And it was my, you know, my thought in the beginning as well too, that to start a business, it would be, you know, a little bit of work in the beginning, and then all of a sudden everything's going to be automatically amazing, and nothing's going to be, you know, difficult anymore. And you quickly realize that's not fucking true, and it's going to be a lot more work, and you always underestimate that work. And so even with my years of experiences, you know, 4 years of experience of underestimating how much time every project would take, I have done the same thing with this project, and you know, it has turned in from what I thought was a cool little idea to, oh shit, this might be a lifelong goal and vision that I'm gonna have to live out. And so that's got some excitement to it, but it's definitely not something that you expect when you first uncover this little idea that sort of slips into your mind. It's really interesting when you know you look at time and how much you have to prioritize it, and you know, you can see just such a drastic divide between people who, you know, who have good time management and are not even just good time management, just like relaxed and capable enough to understand the constraints of time and to live with that just the reality of it. And so, yeah, you know, like I'm meeting even a couple guys right now who are young and they're coming up with all these ideas, well, just like I am. And it's like you can only choose so many of those ideas and actually successfully carry them out. And so, it's a really interesting thing to actually try to prioritize. And I know I've struggled with it, continue to struggle with it, I will. Because I'm just interested and curious about too many things, and I think that's a lot of us. And just as I'm looking up, I just write some quick thoughts down before I did this, and just wanted to see if there was anything, you know, really what I wanted to talk about. But one of the things I had lightly touched on was just this idea of, you know, getting your product out there and validating it and talking to people. And one of the things that I've talked a lot, I just did a workshop with a bunch of people who are in an incubator program, and they're a really, really good group. But they were, you know, a lot of them are in the stage of building their websites for the first time and asking how much it's going to cost and how to do it and what's the best platform and all this stuff. And a big thing that I've tried to preach, and I guess I shouldn't say the word preach, and I apologize for the air in the background again, we're blowing up in this lady. It's, you know, it's a really difficult thing to understand what is right and what is wrong. And so something that I've been mentioning is that, you know, this idea of building iteratively, putting a page out, designing a nice page, one page site, and getting it out there, and maybe using some Google Ads or some Facebook or just word of mouth to, I guess word of mouth for referral, word of mouth to drive some people there, and then use something like Hotjar and Google Analytics and a couple other tools to actually monitor what's happening and how they're using your site. And so I've gained a lot of insights just by doing that with several of our clients, and you can see what people are sort of searching for and landing on your site, and based on those searches, how they behave. That's some really interesting data and information to get in an early stage when, especially you haven't committed a full budget to a website or And you know, you can maybe avoid a lot of pain and expense that didn't bring any, you know, return for you just by doing something like this and actually spending maybe $1,000 on you know getting the page up, spending some $1,000 on ads and everything all together, and then evaluating what came out of it and look into what are the best next logical steps after that. So just something that's interesting and sort of parallel with getting that user feedback quickly, and that's something of course I'm working on with Speak, and I do have the website up if you are interested in going to it. It's speakai.co right now, so speak, speakai as in artificial intelligence, classic, and then .co as in co, no m, it is not .com, it is .co, .com was gone, and I sort of like .co too, so looking at some other domains right now, but those should be expensive, man. And I've got some pretty cool ones right now. I just got speechanalytics.ai, which I'm pretty pumped about. I've got some good stuff hanging around, and I also got this website called pullthatshitup.com, which I just think is funny. It has nothing to do with Speak, but you know, I've got some hilarious sites in that regard, but when I looked for Speak and looking for things around that, especially the one word, and that word being a widely used word with some, you know, some powerful meaning behind it, very expensive. I think I saw $65,000 somewhere. Not sure if I'm quite ready to make that purchase yet. Another thing I just want to mention, man, I was, you know, I'm very skeptical about my ability to actually program and develop. It has been a month of really, well, more than that. I've been working on this for a while, but since the last podcast around and developing Speak and really trying to build some stuff out just to get to the demo phase and something that looks good and something that I can show people and validate. I'm getting closer to a product in that regard. There's still a lot of work to do as well, though, too. But via train, don't worry about that. But as I say, I was skeptical about my own abilities, still am, but I have noticed a pretty drastic increase in my, you know, overall knowledge, and I'm lucky to have, you know, a really smart developer in my office, in my shared co-working space, who I get to access all the time. He is a unlimited, you know, a resource of wisdom and experience in terms of development, and also a nice young kid who has been helping me. I don't know why I call him a kid. He's 20 years old, but like, just it's hilarious the difference, and it feels like me just, you know, 5 years ago, except much smarter and much more technical. So he's also been another abundance of information, and has really, you know, guided me to understand a lot more just about development and programming in general. I've also, if you're interested in some of that stuff, I really recommend this YouTube course called it's called The Crash Course in Computer Science. I'm only, you know, part way through it, but the girl is fantastic. You might have to slow it down a little bit because she does talk quite quickly, and that's coming from me, and it, you know, it's really some core foundational pieces of how computers work and computer science in general, which has also guided me now learning some more practical things with JavaScript, which is both client side and server side language, meaning that JavaScript is often what you guys are seeing on the front end of the website when you're browsing, when you're clicking on something, or an interactive animation is happening, or something is happening, is often triggered by JavaScript. Waiting for an event or having some logical statements in to make this interaction happen or this behavior happen, whereas there's now Node.js, which is server-side version and capable, is done with JavaScript and allows you to actually, you know, wait. Basically what I'm working on now is APIs and communicating server, client to server side, so I can actually bring some data back and then visualize that data and show some really cool information. And that's what I've of course been working on with Speak. And so if I butcher that explanation, that is again because I am still new in these concepts, but I think I'm getting at least slightly towards a better grasp, and it's great to see some foundational pieces coming together. And I, you know, my hope, my goal is that within the, you know, the next 5-10 years, I'm going to have a really good grasp on how a lot of this stuff is working in our world, and if I want to create something that I actually have the ability to do that. It really, you know, not, you know, it does scare me in the ways that there are a lot of people who are younger than me right now who are vastly more knowledgeable in the way that technology is working. They're capable of building it and taking an idea that's abstract and building a functional application out of that that brings value into this world. And so that can be a pretty scary thing for myself at 26, who is someone who is quite technical, and I almost can't imagine the fear that maybe an older person would feel, someone who's not as technical as me, but I also think that they are significantly unaware of how incredibly far ahead some of these younger people are. And that's, it's very interesting to see. It's going to be an interesting divide in the next 20 years. And I think there's a lot of technological illiteracy in my generation right now, in the millennial generation, and they're going to have a very difficult time in the next 15 to 20 years, maybe even before that, with the automation that's coming, with the technology that is becoming available, and now these this younger generation is able to manipulate that technology and really use it to get far ahead. And you worry with the ability of using AI and automation that we are quickly moving towards a vast wealth inequality where the technological elite are the ones who are ruling everything. And what we're seeing right now is governments complaining against against companies like Amazon, like Facebook, like Google, who are more powerful than they are. They have more data and more information. They're better and more capable at using that information. They have developers who are the most talented in the world who can build out amazing infrastructure and systems quickly that are smart and intelligent and grow. This is a threat to the average consumer and average person, but it's also a threat to the entire really structure of the world that we have, which is separated by countries and states and borders right now. So it's gonna be a very interesting time as we move forward. I have to be conscious because I've been having some problems charging with this Olympus, and so I'm watching right now. If you hear a little click or something, it's because I'm actually looking at my battery. It says I still got 2 hours, and I almost believe it. We'll see what happens. And so if I ever cut off at some point, that's because it's broken. So not broken, it's turned off, battery's run out. That someone said to me this week that makes all the sense in my head, but I'd never just heard the term, and that was neuromarketing. And this makes a lot of sense to me. I've been looking a lot into psychology and neuroscience, and I've been taking that information directly, basically from audiobooks and just lectures and articles, applying that into marketing. And two small examples of that I've, well, I guess many more than that, but two that I've looked at have been the FOG behavior model, which is a really interesting way that explains how behavior and actions are how behavior is made and how actions are taken, and basically saying it's your motivation to do it, your ability, and a trigger. And there's also for example, sorry, I apologize, something that I would say attention ratio, where we look at eliminating options on the page to make someone put a priority on the task that we want to get them towards. And so a lot of psychology involved in marketing, and yet I'd never heard this term really just put together, neuromarketing. And a very smart guy mentioned it to me. I sort of bluffed, I'm sorry, sir, if you're listening to this, I don't know why I did it, but I was just like, yeah, that's a really cool term. And I said I was interested in it, and I was interested, and I am interested, but I'd never heard that term before. So now I sort of feel goofy about that. But anyways, the interesting thing there is that, I've been slowly moving into what I feel that, what is that field, and that, and yet I didn't even know the term that I was heading into. And so There's some really cool things I think that I've maybe mentioned in the podcast before. One, you know, book that I've been listening to is Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, and I apologize for the name right now of escaping me of the author. It's an amazing, amazing book. Amazing, a fantastic book that's really changed my, the way that I'm looking at how our brain functions and how our unconscious thoughts turn into feelings, behaviors, and actions that we actually have. And so that list to me just goes on of applications that I'm seeing in psychology, in neuromarketing, and apologize. I am looking at a notification on my phone. I'm an idiot. I should have never goddamn done it. But I apologize, guys. I am like monotoning this up tonight. But I hope you guys have still been somewhat interested in these topics. This stuff is really interesting to me, but I am an odd person, and so that's to be expected. I'm really interested in, just right now also, like I'm building this, building Speak. This podcast is called Speak with Tyler Bryan currently. I might just limit it to Speak at some point if it's not just really me doing Speak anymore. Even the perception of, say this company pans out anyway that they want it to, software as a service company. I've built a valuable project with my B2B, and I've also got some B2C stuffing per se working. Scale that company to, several $1 million a year in revenue, and I grow it. The people's perception of me, as the person who started it, as an owner, doing podcasts like this, talking like this, and just being, I don't know, it's just an odd thing. It's a really weird thing about who you can be if you are in business. I think that perception and that that expectation has changed drastically. We see guys like the head of Vice and obviously like head of Uber, places that their CEOs, their founders are not traditional figures, and I think that's a good thing. I think that we need to see diversity, and that we need to see that not everyone needs to be a stickler to be a smart, successful business owner, and that's a good thing. And so I hope I can be part of that by doing this, by talking about having concussions and past and mental health and drugs and all these kinds of things. You really hope that we can look past, for that, maybe if you don't agree with me, at least you can look past, who I am and see that, I've worked to build a valuable company, a valuable product that helps, and that hope helps people communicate better. And that's really, I guess, that's what I can hope for. I think I'm done with what I wanted to really talk about in that regards. The other thing I have been it's been pretty crazy, is those California fires. I saw Bill Maher had his finale last night for the season, and he showed some clips of what some of the houses look like in California, and that death toll has risen to over 200. It's pretty like just breathtaking what has actually happened there. And everyone of course jumping straight to climate change and looking at the effects of these forest fires, and this is obviously a huge impact on that. It's been very dry in California, and apparently by limiting the amount of fires and the natural use of forest, it's made it even more a bedrock of flammable materials that spread this, and didn't even go through just forests, but through houses and massive properties that are, considered almost like urban land, sort of. So that's a pretty crazy thing, and I wish all the people there the best they can actually, the best they can be, and I really hope that those people are okay. It's winter here in Canada. It's it's turned from Florida to Russia very quickly. And it's we've got some snow as I'm looking outside my window right now. I can see some snow on the roof. And we've had some, you know, some inconsistencies in it. And apparently it's supposed to warm up again, but it's a different season. And with that different season, I feel like a different energy comes in and a different mood. I know a lot of people struggle with this season. I have in the past. I'm hoping, you know, I don't feel so far the effects as much. And actually, I would say even that my effects are more in September and when it first transitions to autumn than when it really first does start to snow. But it also is that very dark time of year, and people, you know, really do struggle with that. So we'll see how that goes. I guess I'll keep some updates, and as I continue these podcasts, I'll keep you an update. If you're not listening here in Canada and experiencing what you experience, I'll be sharing some of those details with us. And so I stop saying "and so." It just seems like the transition. I'm making a you know, if I'm saying "and so," I'm making a transition. Working on that, guys. I'm getting better, and part of doing this podcast is, you know, building, you know, building a practice of speaking and sharing and building these neurological pathways into, you know, as I hope I've in some ways that even throughout just the progress in a couple of months here, I've really tried to put a focus on slowing down the way I'm talking, pronouncing the words that I'm saying better. And I don't know if, you know, maybe there is a perceptible shift in your guy's mind. And so I am getting a phone call right now. I am not going to take it. I'm sorry, Rob. I love you, though. She's going to be mad about why I didn't take that phone call. And I should probably text her back as I say it. But as I'm doing that, and so, didn't say it that time, I transitioned to but. One second here. She left a voicemail. Uh-oh, that's never good. She's calling and leaving voicemail. I could be in trouble, but I hope that I'm not. I wanted to look at a couple mental models here, something that I've been doing in other podcasts. I would say like this would be slight part of mental models too, and I just wanted to look through what they have from this original list that I was looking at. And clicking here on my battery capacity, I still look good. Oh, that's not so bad. She just wants to know what alcohol I want. She's going at the LCBO, which is the provincial alcohol store. I'm going to get a bottle of Riesling white wine. And so these mental models I'm looking at are from deciding category. She's going to be home soon if she's at the LCBO, so I'm going to have to wrap up through a couple. If all of a sudden you hear this like slam in the door, and maybe her yell, not yell, like she's going to be saying hi, then I might just be like, all right, I'm out of here. I don't know why. Am I ashamed that I'm doing this? I just told her that I'm doing like a podcast thing, but it still feels weird. It just feels weird. I'm just here talking to myself, talking to you if you are listening to this, obviously, but in that regard, I'm still sitting at my house by myself doing this. It's an odd world that we're living in. People talk about privacy, but we, you know, there's millions of us right now. Oh, wow, she said five. She got lots of time then. That there's millions of us right now just having, you know, conversations with ourselves or with other people, and we're just recording those, you know, sharing those and trying to get as many people to listen to, like, deep intimate conversations as we possibly can. And the thing that I've just been talking about lately, is something that I've seen, is just like this drive to share just your most intimate details of your life, because that's, I feel like it's just like all it gets people going anymore. It's like when, you know, a young kid starts out watching very softcore porn laid on a you know, Friday night on that on Latin TV or some shit, and you know, 12 years later they're escalating into some very deep, you know, corners of Pornhub. Yeah. Maybe that's the same thing that's happened with us as people, and obviously, you know, what we're seeing in the news and what we're seeing in undigesting media content has desensitized us in so many ways, and by looking to real people and them being able to share these, you know, real events and experiences in their life, it creates an authentic connection that we're really lacking in so many other parts of our lives. And so, although I make fun of it, there's no question why we're craving this kind of content. And why people are making this kind of content, because they want to be a part of something and contributing to this. It's still it's a very weird thing, and you wonder what it all leads to, right? Like, all I feel like we're doing is generating a ridiculous amount of content all the time, and I often compare it to, and you know what people get pretty quickly, the concept there is like that. Creating content is just, you know, keeping up with it's the new keeping up with the Joneses in that regards. And so, fuck. Yeah. Oh, sad. No way. So, in that regards, I don't know what I was talking about. The and so just knocked me the hell out of it. Obviously, you know, it's just odd, like, even that. So focus in this regards, and I've talked about this in this podcast many times. First starts with a notification, then starts with a text message back, and then me looking at a message, and then the air turning on in the back, and so quickly how much stimuli can come in. So crazy how quickly stimuli can come in and change. You know, for me, something, yeah, like my just completely what I'm thinking about, and that's something I've been working on a lot. Trying to produce is just this idea of focus. And I think one of the benefits of, you know, this podcast that I'm at least trying to get out of it, and what I've, you know, I think works in this regards, and you know, one thing that I've mentioned is, you know, trying to actually do it through just audio like this, because I think it's I'm more engaged in actually delivering more of a message and doing a better job of actually sharing what I want to share. In some regards, I think there is some limitations with what I, you know, I love sharing what I'm looking at online and the websites and everything, but there's just that keeping up with the Joneses, and I remember that, and as I digress, there's so much content that's going on, and we're all just pushing it and making it, and like half the content is literally now just people doing like talk shows and talking to themselves and vlogs and all this stuff, and while I make fun of it, I'm contributing to it right now. We're really just contributing to this mass blob of information, which is being mined mostly by large tech companies. Coming back to that, I guess, you know, it's sort of messed up in some ways. Speak is going to be able to capture some really valuable, cool information about how people are communicating. I'm obviously hoping to use that for good and, you know, take that data and make products that help people communicate better. But I feel like that's exactly what fucking Mark Zuckerberg said when he started Facebook. And so you never know what happens with technology. You never know what happens with power. And, it's a really interesting thing as someone who is, you know, very critical of these companies, but also building one that in some ways has some similar functions. However, the differentiation that I'm at least trying to make is that I don't ever actually want to sell to advertisers. I want to keep the information safe and secure within us, and so that we can build even better products for people that they can use and then again communicate better. And I feel like that is sort of similar to what, you know, Zuckerberg said again, but what he did was charge, he kept the product free because he knew by keeping it free he would get more users. And then, you know, wanted to build his revenue through ads, which has worked extremely well for him. He has obviously made some money, and you know, props to him in that regards. But he's also fucked up a lot of people. Woo! And it creates this really almost unbalanced, unbalanced relationship with the same customers that they have, Whereas, you know, my hope and my belief is with what I'm trying to do with Speak is that if I can build this the right way, that the only thing that matters is the customers. And so everything revolves around them. I build the value around them. I value them because they are the customers who are going to help me survive and grow. And so I'm trying to have them in my best interest. And I thought, like, at some time in their lifespan, Facebook actually did maybe have that, but it obviously went wrong at some point, and now we're hearing things about them working with PR firms that are shady and involved, and, you know, it's crazy, like, anti-Soros conspiracies. It's pretty crazy how whack people's values and priorities can get, and so many companies, I think, start off with such an amazing progressive goal and dream that they have. It quickly falls apart when the realities of the world falls in, and, you know, their vision gets blocked off by obstacles of wealth and access to resources, and sometimes they have to make judgment calls and maybe even moral sacrifices to get to that vision they have. So, it only feels like it would take a couple steps of that, and you don't get caught, and then all of a sudden you're down this really slippery slope of making these decisions that lead to you having, you know, shady PR firms that are representing you who are, you know, really causing chaos in the world. So that was a question that was raised in an article that I was reading, and it was, you know, has Facebook had a net positive or net negative effect on this world? And, you know, it brings around this discussion of what is technology? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it neutral? Is it just a tool? And these are questions that are really hard to answer, especially when we sometimes see the outcomes the way we do. I don't know, because I've seen it used for so much good, and the fact that, you know, I can share this online with you, and we can have these amazing, you know, what I believe this is, you know, the stuff that so many people are talking about is important and valuable, and to be able to share that and, you know, connect friends with it and do that is an amazing, amazing thing. But then we also see the divide and the conflict and the way that the same system can be abused for really just, damaging, traumatic things. And it's a question of, you know, how do these platforms need to be managed? A lot of people are obviously talking right now about, you know, do they need to be government owned or, you know, something like that, and really regulated a lot more. And I don't know, because it's, you know, the government is bureaucratic and usually slow and horrible, and that's why we have so many problems with our system in the first place. And the reason why Facebook and these places have been so successful is because they've been so quick and innovative and strategic with how quickly they do grow, that, you know, they almost seem like the right people to do this task. They just need to do a better job and be enforced properly instead of just, taken over and controlled completely. They know the product, they know how it works. It's not like a bunch of guys from the government are going to be able to come take over the Facebook operation and run it properly, and anyone would ever want to keep using it. And so I struggle with it. People are, you know, relatively uneducated sometimes in this world that we're in, and it's horrible and it's sad. And, it's like, when in a person who hasn't had amazing access and opportunity to education that some of us get, then, you know, they share misinformation and they cause conflicts online, and a lot of that stuff has caused problems, and we need to figure out how to manage that. And what do you hope get to, at least what Facebook's, he believed in his core was to help people connect with amazing people and their friends and families and share experiences and moments. And I just don't know if that's going to happen. So
We'll see.
Okay. I'm sure this will be a ongoing topic. Now, back to these mental models. I do have a little bit of time here. Robinson is back around 5, so I'm going to just go through a couple of these. And one last check here, maybe not last, but another check here on the battery. We're good to go. So let's look at a couple deciding mental models. This is going to be mental models part 2, deciding. And so I guess I should go back up here at the top just to give a little overview description. And so this was written originally by the founder of DuckDuckGo, which is basically an anonymous search engine that cares much more about privacy than Google does, Gabriel Weinberg. And so he came across a 1995 speech called The Psychology of Human Misjudgment, and he introduced to how behavioral economics can be applied to business investing. And more profoundly, it also opened up to him to mental models across a wide variety of disciplines. And so, mental models can be very useful to make sense of things and help general ideas. You have to apply them, at the right context and the right time. So, the goal is to take a look at some of these mental models and then be able to apply them into our lives. And so I've been learning these, but I have been, basically conserving this page to this podcast. And so I haven't actually got a chance to look at this since the last time I was speaking to you through this podcast. And so I'm learning along with you. I've interested in this concept called live learning. I don't know how it works out. And I think there was a lot of mumbling last time as I tried to figure some stuff out. But it's this stuff is really interesting to me, and I'm hoping even by talking about it that some other people, maybe it sparks some ideas in them, or maybe there's some conversations that get started. And so the first one here is, a business case, which captures the reasoning for initiating a project or task. It is often presented in a well-structured written document, but may also come in the form of a short verbal argument. That makes sense. A short verb argument or presentation related. Why this now? And so, why are you making this ask at the moment? Why are you trying to pitch the solution or identifying this problem? What are your intentions behind what you're doing? And that's sort of how I look at that. Opportunity cost. So the value of the best alternative forgone. We're given limited resources. A choice needs to be made between several mutually exclusive alternatives. Assuming the best choice is made, it is the cost incurred by not enjoying the benefit that would have been taken by taking the second best available choice. And so this is this one is a horrifying one to me. It's just like, by choosing to do one thing, you are losing the possible benefits of choosing the other option. And so, maybe that is, choosing to take one job over another, or leaving your boyfriend or leaving your girlfriend, things that are, even just like, if you're a freelancer, it's, taking up, saying yes to one project and saying no to another project, and you don't know what that project led to. There's so many times that opportunity cost comes up, and it is something to be aware of, because you want to balance out and weigh out the opportunities or the decisions that you have to make. And this is a really interesting way to look at it, because you know that you make a very important decision when you do that by losing basically the benefits of that other choice. Intuition, a personal experience coded into your personal neural network, which means your intuition is dangerous outside the bounds of your personal experience. So this is related to thinking fast versus thinking slow, which was that book that I actually mentioned, which is interesting. It's a dichotomy between two modes of thought. System one is fast, instinctive, and emotional. System two is slower, more deliberative, and more logical. And so they would say that intuition is your system one. You're fast, you're instinctive, and it's emotional. It's the so I guess it would be maybe a little bit of both when they look at intuition. I'm just thinking if it's only system one or is system two also involved in intuition. but it's personal experience coding to your personal neural network. So, you know, basically part of that experience, because you've experienced these things in the past, you have, you know, intuition about how something might happen. You might have insights into how to be successful in that. Intuition is often looked to me, you know, from my perspective, and I think many people's perspective, as, you know, I guess from past experience, but I almost think intuition is just also sometimes from like a natural primal experience, and maybe like even like encoded into your DNA or something, right? So I don't know if that's how everyone else looks at it, but intuition in some regards to me has been that. And so intuition is, in their regards, is personal experience coded into your personal neural network, which means your intuition is dangerous outside the bounds of your personal experience. So you can use your personal experience for many things, but might not be effective. People talk about intuition as like being something that, if harnessed right, can be very effective. So wish I get a better definition in some regards, because I could look that up on the Google, but I'm not gonna. No, I'm gonna look. I just want to see. I want to see what it says about intuition on here. Intuition, which I think is spelled wrong. Yeah, the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reading or reasoning. So that's more what I think of. So I don't like the definition that they give, but maybe that's what he's looking at. A thing that one knows or considers likely from an instinctive feeling rather than conscious reasoning. So yes, that exactly. So it's the system one intuitively making a decision or coming to a, you know, conclusion based on, you know, based without the need for your system two and more deliberate thought. So that's what I thought of, you know, intuition, and that definition that he has there is a little bit odd. So local versus global optimum, I don't know what this one is at all. A local optimum of an optimization problem is a solution that is optimal, okay, either maximal or minimal within a neighboring set of candidate solutions. This is in contrast to global optimum, which is the optimal solution among all possible solutions, not just those in a particular neighborhood of values. Okay. So I applied math and computer science. Haven't come across that in my old crash course yet, though, guys. I'm gonna have to take a look at that one and come back to that. A local optimum within a neighboring set of candidates. So just locally, like I would say, like a local file folder, comparative to your global computer. So installing like a package globally versus locally. But I don't know about that. Decision trees. Decision support tool that uses a tree-like graph or model of decisions and their possible consequences, including chance, events, outcomes, resources, costs, and utility. Huh. I like decision trees, but I never really make them. That's an interesting way to look at actually making decisions in a, you know, up. Yeah, and I mean, I basically do that, but I never actually draw it out. And so there's a picture up here on Wikipedia. When it pulls up, I can click on the hyperlink, and pulls up Wikipedia for decision tree. And yeah, it's a good way to look at a task, right? Because you're trying to figure out, and a lot of people have talked about that. For example, you know, Tim Ferriss, when you're coming up to a thing that you're doing or a risk or something, something that may have some risk in it, basically write out the worst things that could possibly happen. And once you write out all those, you realize it's maybe not as bad as you think. So in a, you know, a way, a decision tree is very similar, allowing you to map out all those possible outcomes. And by looking at those, you can get a better understanding of what's good, what's, you know, what's bad, what is it worth it, and maybe the right path to actually take. Sunk cost that has already been incurred and cannot be recovered. Related, throwing good money after bad, or in for a penny, in for a pound. I think this one is one that a lot of people feel. Not to be, I hope, indicative in anything in my relationship, but like for example, just People staying together for a long time. We've had lots of people talk about this, staying together for a long time, because you've invested so much in that person that it feels like a waste to not stay with them, right? And so you hear about that a lot of time, like, you know, I should have known that I broke up with him, but I stayed with him and now I regret it. So just something like that. But that happens all the time with businesses, with a product that they develop. And I think in a lot of ways, sunk cost has been a big piece of what has driven this obsessive need to continue the oil industry, in the regards of they've put so much time and energy and their family and their heritage and their love and their money and everything into the oil business, and that was the way that the world ran, and it was such a powerful piece of their world and experience, and now it's really difficult for them to be able to give that up after they've sunk so much into it. Availability bias. People tend to heavily weigh their judgments towards more recent information, making new opinions biased towards that latest news. This is obviously one that has impact on a lot of people. It's had impact on me, especially as someone, you know, I feel maybe who had too many concussions and smoked too much weed. That they just, it's, you know, the first thing that comes into your mind is often what you go with. Well, you know, maybe the right answer or the best answer is sitting behind that, and you would need to put some more work and energy into actually retrieving that information. So our mind obviously is automatically going to the quickest and most efficient answer. We make, you know, we process so much information and make so many exchanges a day that we're always trying to be as efficient as we can be, and so we often go for that first available thing, even though it can often be the wrong thing. So, thinking fast and thinking slow book really does a great look at that, if you are interested in that concept of availability bias. The next one that follows up after that, and there's this one and one more, and then I'm going to wrap up this podcast, which I hope you have enjoyed. I have enjoyed it very much. It's 4:20 right now, which is an interesting sign. Confirmation bias, the tendency to search for, interpret, favor, and recall information in a way that confirms one's pre-existing beliefs or hypotheses, while giving disproportionately less consideration to alternative possibilities. So, not and so, though. In my mind, I look at this right now, my business, I look at no confirmation bias that I've seen a bunch of other people be successful with software businesses. I've read some cool stories and da da da. I think because of that I'm going to be successful in my company, and because I've had some success with 6.5 that I'm also going to have some success with Speak. Don't know why I'm talking like that. But this happens, I think, everywhere. This is what makes people want to be, you know, famous and celebrities, and what makes people, you know, want to do all these things. And, you know, again, for that celebrity, that famous example, you know, it's so often that we look at the people who have made it, but we forget about there's millions of housewives and guys working average jobs in LA who didn't make it. And, you know, we got to have to remember that. We're seeing the winners, but there's a lot of losers and they're not losers in life, not losers in that, but they're just not the famous people that, you know, come to that availability bias, and because there's only so many people who can do that, and so the focus is obviously put on those people, and we forget about the people who didn't make it, and so we, you know, we think that it's maybe, again, there's a disproportionate weight that we might also be successful. And last here, which is a big one, I think, is loss aversion. And so that is people's tendency to strongly prefer avoiding losses to acquiring gains. I'm going to pop this baby up on Wikipedia just to get a little more context on it, because it is an interesting concept. In cognitive psychology and decision theory, loss aversion refers to people's tendency to prefer avoiding losses to acquiring equivalent gains. It is better not to lose $5 than to find $5. Very prominent in the domain of economics. So one person who loses $100 will lose more satisfaction than another person who will get than another person will gain satisfaction from $100. In marketing, the use of trial periods and rebates tries to take advantage of the buyer's tendency to value the good more after the buyer incorporates it into the status quo. would you rather get a $5 discount or avoid a $5 surcharge? So you can frame it differently. The endowment effect. Humans may be hardwired to be loss averse due to asymmetric evolutionary pressure on losses and gains. For an organism operating close to the edge of survival, the loss of a day's food could cause death, whereas the gain of an extra day's food would not cause an extra day of life unless the food could be easily and effectively stored. Interesting. So, before storage. Endowment effect. The people place a higher value on a good that they own than on identical good that they do not own. Huh. So a lot of deep other little things that come out of this. So interesting, man. Some people question its existence. Expectation based. So loss aversion. No one likes to fucking lose, man. People often do some really weird things to avoid their losses. I think as we creep through, you know, into this new year of 2019, you know, there's been a little bit of a blue wave here down in the United States, and you know, not to end with getting too political, but it's that's just, you know, make me remind of something of, you know, Donald Trump with these House Democrats now coming in. He is in for some, you know, in some way, some loss aversion and some sunk cost here. He's going to have to make some decision trees, maybe use his intuition. He's going to have to make a business case, and he's going to have to look at the opportunity cost. And I hope he doesn't have too much confirmation bias or an availability bias, or that guy's going to be in some trouble. All right, guys, that is that's the end of that list on deciding for the mental models of this list. I wasn't as excited about that one. I thought it was still okay. There was some cool stuff in there, but I do have some more to look through, and I'm going to be back looking at some more mental models as well too in the future. So I really talked about a lot of different things today. I hope that you did enjoy this if you are listening. And if you are, let me know. I've seen lots of people listening to it and giving, you know, getting views through just on my WordPress site. I have some statistics on the back end. And so I'd love to hear from those people who are listening to it. Send me a message. Tell me why you're listening to it, how you found it, and what you'd like to hear more of or watch more of. So this is, again, this is Tyler Bryden. You've been listening to Speak Right Now with Tyler Bryden. And I wish you all the best for the rest of the day, wherever you're listening to this right now. Keep working hard. Keep doing what you're doing. It's time with, again, 2019 coming up, where we're all looking at what the new year holds for us, some resolutions that we have. And I'm right there along with you making some resolutions right now, too. And so, you know, we hope every year that we can look back and reflect and say that it was our best year yet, that we made, you know, we strive to become better and improve, and that we did. And I hope, you know, for myself, that 2019 is going to be no different. And I hope I can, you know, as I start to reflect on what 2018 was, that I do come off with a good feeling about it. And I hope you guys have the same feeling. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk soon.